episode of Sacred Cinema. I'm your host, Jimmy Bernasconi, for the next half hour here on 2XX 98.3 FM, People Powered Radio. This week's episode is entitled Honor Thy Family. Honesty is the best policy. If I lose mine honor, I lose myself. It's a very famous quote from old mate Billy Shakespeare. Can we unpack that a little bit? Hang on, William. Honesty is it's the best policy. It's always the best policy, no matter what. No matter what insurance company you're with, the honesty policy is always the superior one. I'm not sure about that. Is there anyone else what did Mark Twain say about honesty? He was that if you tell the truth, you don't have to remember anything. That's, again, shedding truth and honesty in a very good light. What if you're not really a literature guy? Maybe if you like, maybe a light music from Liverpool. Well, John Lennon, he said, being honest may not get you a lot of friends, but it'll always get you the right ones. Three very heavy quotes there that shed or that paint honesty in a very positive light, doesn't it? Is it really that simple, though? Is honesty always a good thing? Should we just always tell people how we feel about things all the time? Well, what if you ask God, say, right? Well, he says, and I should say, by the way, honesty is a very interesting word. Do you know the word that honesty is derived from? It's derived from the word honestus in Latin, which means in English, honorable or respected. That's why in that Shakespeare quote, it says, honesty is the best policy. If I lose mine honor, I lose myself. And originally, honor and honesty are kind of like this kind of interchangeable thing in a way, which is an honorable person is one who is honest. Someone who honors someone is someone who gives them their word, who is constantly truthful and honest with them. So let's go back to what does our Father who art in heaven say? He says, he commanded in the fifth commandment, he said, honor your father and your mother, that your days may be long in the land that the Lord your God is giving you. And if we're talking about God and the Lord, you know, the Father, we're using words, familiar language, analogizing important relationships with spiritual figures to the family, family connections, honoring the family, being honest with the family. It seems that the Western canon has brainwashed us to believe that you must always and forever be honest and honorable to your family. Well, I want to break this relationship down a little bit this week, everybody. I want to talk about how does this concept of honor and honesty and family, how do they interrelate? Should we always be honest with our family members? Why do these things always clash in the context of family? Why do we care so much about being honest with family members as opposed to other members of society? I mean, we're all part of the human family after all. Well, to answer some of these questions, let's talk movies. The first one we're going to talk about is Omen, directed by rapper Baloji from 2023. I saw that one very recently in the Sydney Film Festival. We're then going to talk about You Hurt My Feelings, also from 2023, directed by Nicole Holofcena. And then we're going to finish off with Robert Redford's 1980 Oscar-winning film, Ordinary People. So to put things in a little bit more context, I suppose we're going to start off talking about sensing maybe a lack of honesty in the family and why that causes us pain. Why do we not like it when we can feel that people aren't being honest with us? And why wouldn't someone be honest in a family? And then we're going to sort of turn and go to a place where it's like, well, if honesty isn't there, why don't we employ it? If honesty is such a good thing, why don't we just be honest with each other all the time? And then we're going to sort of talk about the implications of that, particularly in a very serious situation, and why that can be a very powerful thing, maybe a dangerous thing, or just something that has some pretty grave consequences. But let's start off now, though, with Baloji's 2023 film, Omen. So I don't imagine many people have seen this one. It's had limited release in Australia. I mean, it hasn't really technically been released because it was on at the festival when I saw it, and there's not much on it. So to give you a brief rundown, it's about a Congolese man named Kofi who is somewhat estranged from his family and returns to his birthplace in the Congo with his wife, who is from Belgium. And I think he's been living in Belgium, and they go down to the Congo for this major family event and also to pay the dowry for his wife. And all that's very significant. Now, we're going to sort of ask this question to begin with, right? Why do the concepts of family and honesty and honor, why do they clash in such an intense way, right? Why do we care about whether our families honor us, and why does our family care if we honor them and are honest with them and vice versa? Well, to start off, this film is, in having a son, an estranged son, come back to a family and go to, you know, weddings and baby showers and special ceremonies and funerals and things like that, it definitely evokes this idea, particularly when you've been removed from your culture, which is that we kind of value family and feel indebted to family and feel like we need our family's approval kind of no matter what, right? Even for people that run away from their families, kind of like this guy, I think he was like a sorcerer. I don't really know the all of the spiritual teachings of the community and the culture that he's from. But basically, I think he was like sent off when he was younger for being a sorcerer or something like that. And even if he is banished away, even if his family strikes him, he still holds on to wanting to impress them, wanting things to be amicable, honoring his family, even though they have banished him. And also, even if the things that they believe in are kind of like the things that we don't believe in anymore. So like a lot of people can relate to that experience where your family is still maybe very religious, or they have a certain spirituality or spiritual belief or political belief even, and you don't really vibe with it, but you still want to respect them. So we see a lot of exploration in this film around the importance of family events, wearing the right clothes to the family events. When a baby is born, a lot of babies and maternal imagery. And this is really a film, I think, really about motherly love as well at its core, but we're going to kind of focus on that in a very specific way in a second. But baby is very important. There's a motif of breastfeeding, and there's a lot of discussion around what is good and bad breastfeeding. There's also lots of cultural customs and rituals, and I think the fact that he is very adamant about paying this dowry, which is kind of like they pay it out of their like aeroplane fee, like it's a very antiquated and outdated idea. He still really wants to do it, even though he's being pushed around and pulled by his family and everything like that. And sort of he has this yearning to be accepted despite the fact that he clearly isn't, and he's still a bit of a reject in this family. And speaking of, I mentioned before about the spiritual, supernatural elements, it's really interesting to see how the supernatural is explored in this film, and I think it does parallel what we're talking about, where you can still have respect for something being a religious or spiritual custom even if you don't believe in it. So there's this motif of funerals in this film, and if you think about that, even if you are an atheistic person, you think about respecting a funeral. You know, that's an instance where you respect tradition. You respect something that has been conserved in the culture, even though you don't really necessarily believe in ghosts and things. It comes from a place of respect, even though it's a purely human construct. The idea of having a coffin and making sure that there are flowers. It doesn't really matter if those things are there if you don't believe in magic or spirituality or whatever, but we do it because we feel that we owe it to the person who is deceased. And this certainly plays into some of the conversation we had a couple of weeks ago about the conservative-progressive tension. But there's a second part to all this, which is despite the fact that Kofi is being so loyal and trying to honor his family as best he can, there is this very cleverly done looming sense of alienation. And I really just want to say, and it's hard to explain this, but unless you've seen the film, it's pretty much carried in the performances. It's pretty much carried in that the first time we see his mother, the stare she gives the camera, we've got this front-on shot where she's looking down the lens, and you can just tell that she's just cold and angry at him. Maybe because he's overseas for too long for what he did as a kid. It's pure cinema in that sense that you can just sense. And then also from his sisters and cousins and things, when they look at his wife, not his sister, but his cousins and stuff, you can just, it's almost quite comical the way that they kind of look at her with like this kind of contempt. And the film does do a good job as well as sort of lightly just peppering the film with how this dynamic is kind of exacerbated by the obvious material and economic differences. We can't not mention that in a film that's set in the Congo. Obviously, there's a great deal of social some issues, some social issues going on there. And if someone's coming from like a first world country, there is this sort of sense of contempt, this kind of tall poppy thing going on a little bit. But I want to talk about, if I can just sort of string this film together in the context of today's discussions, I want to talk about the title, right? We talk about this idea of the omen, and there are a few omens in this film. But in the context of family and family tension and honoring the family, an omen is something where, you know, it's like a moment, right, where we like feel like something eerie has just happened, and it's kind of previewing. It's kind of letting us know that something might be around the corner, but we don't. It's not quite tangible. It's not quite obvious enough to us, so that we can prove that there's some kind of entity of maliciousness coming for us around the corner. It's an awkward thing. It kind of leaves us quite vulnerable, because we haven't quite seen enough to run away or to cause alarm, but we've certainly seen enough to be put on notice, to be scared. So we kind of have no like tangible reason to actually fear anything, no concrete knowledge that we're in danger. But even if there's, you know, sometimes there's not even a perceived risk, but something could just be a freaky occurrence. Like, no one from any place in the world would want to walk through a cemetery at night and an owl fly by or a black cat come out of nowhere, right? That would be some kind of omen that even if you don't subscribe to any sort of spiritual teachings, that would freak you out no matter what. And in one sense, this motif of the omen plays into this thing of respecting old ways and tradition and this sense of the intangible and what I mentioned before about funerals and paying respect to something even though you might not sign up to it. But I think it also plays really well into this idea of sensing that something is wrong, but not being able to point to anything. And if you think about Christmas lunch, or you think about seeing your parents after a long time, or a family member or something like that, sometimes there can be a little omen. Someone say, oh, you don't want a cup of tea. Oh, I've noticed you're not wearing that shirt I bought you. Oh, and you can get this sort of sense of like, they haven't actually said anything to put me on notice, but I can sense that something is hiding behind the veil there. So family life is kind of riddled with this kind of, I'm not going to say dishonesty, but this lack of honesty. So why don't we just simply just be honest? Why can't we just tell each other, you know, hey, Dad, why are you angry at me? Hey, son, you know, why are you being so quiet? Why can't we just come out with it? Well, before we address that question, you just remind you, I listen to 2XX 98.3 FM People Powered Radio. I'm your host, Jimmy Bernasconi, here for the remainder of this half hour slot. And just a reminder to jump onto our website if you'd like to consider subscribing to the station or sponsoring the show. We'd love that. But also stay tuned for more quality radio programming coming on after this program that you're listening to, Sacred Cinema. But moving on now to You Hurt My Feelings, this new film from Nicole Holofcina. So we finished our conversation with the omen about, like, why don't we just come out with it? Why don't we just be honest with each other? Why don't we just call a spade a spade? Well, in this film, our protagonist, played by Julia Louis-Dreyfus, my favourite actor in the world, as a big Seinfeld fan, obviously, is a writer with a new book. And her husband has been saying that he really likes it, but he doesn't really. And this kind of leads to sort of like a marital breakdown, because she's like, how could my best buddy in the whole wide world, and they do a good job of sort of showing how they are really cute together, how could he lie to my face this whole time? And I think there's a really good depiction, a very simple depiction of the failing of honesty. Right? We gave all those quotes at the beginning of the show about, you know, honesty is the best policy, but well, maybe it's not, because honesty is brutal, right? So we see in the film that by telling someone how you actually feel about a book can really hurt their feelings. And I guess you could say that part of it is that he wasn't honest, but a big exploration of this film as we go through it and all the different relationships is that he kind of is right to not tell her how he feels, because obviously if you tell your wife that you don't like her book, that's going to hurt her feelings too. And she actually does say that she cares about what he thinks. And we see, you've got to see the film, but that does happen. But also, if we think back to Omen as well, that there's a scene, and it reminded me so much of Saint Omer, which we talked about a couple of weeks ago, my other favourite film of this year, where, you know, motherly truth bombs, right? Like telling your kid, you know, I never really wanted to have you. I tried to have an abortion. I didn't have the economic means to keep you. You ruined my life. That's something that a lot of women and fathers, I suppose, feel about their children but can't bear to tell them, because how could you possibly tell your child that and expect them not to freak out and go crazy, right? While we're trying to spread the love here between all the films, Omen does sort of answer that question a little bit. Like, well, why can't you just be brutally honest? Because honestly, particularly in a situation like living in the Congo, in a third world country, being honest can leave some pretty heavy truth bombs. But also, I think what You Hurt My Feelings also uncovers is this idea that how can anyone really distinguish how they even feel about something? Like truth is so slimy and and enigmatic and difficult to hold on to. So the husband, Julia Louis-Dreyfus' husband in this film, he does make a really good point, which is why does my opinion actually matter? He's played by Tobias Menzies, by the way. Tobias is why do you care what I think? I'm not a writer. Wouldn't it be better for me just to say something nice that encourages you rather than give my opinion, which doesn't even matter anyway? And we also sort of see the same thing in Omen as well, where the mother character you can kind of see this thing where she despite the fact that she wants to honor and maintain the customs of her community, you can sort of see her being like, this is all just sort of like a dream. How real is this? Look around. Look at the world we live in. How can any kind of custom be trusted? If I wanted to honor a custom or honor a tradition, what parts of it am I meant to keep honoring? Every history, every community has some bad parts in its past. Do I have to honor those things as well? And again, calling back to some conversations we had recently, we did the Blue Caftan, for example, is a really good film that explores that idea. So, and I also did want to quickly touch on the fact that although this is a film about family, we do see this on sort of all levels, but today we're focusing mostly on family. But we see it, there's an actor in this film and he has to deal with sort of how the audience and how our director receives what he does. And there's also a little bit of a mini exploration of political correctness in this specific bar scene where Julia Louis-Dreyfus addresses these two women who she miscategorizes as friends, but they're actually married. And I think that's a little sort of mini exploration of that kind of brutal sort of instinctive honesty, otherwise known as maybe prejudice or being presumptuous, is kind of an honest expression of what you're thinking, but it's not really the right thing to do because it's offensive. And also, it's, again, we're talking about, it's hard to distinguish what is truthful or not. If you don't know whether someone's married or sisters or friends or whatever, you can't categorize them properly, or at least you can't do it and know that you'd be right in doing it. So honesty is a tricky thing, and even outside of familial level. And I really think it's important I touch on the fact that Tobias Menzies' character in this film is a psychologist. And so if we're talking about families, his role is to be this kind of benevolent outsider who people can confide in, who don't have a familial connection. So even though we talk about how sacred the family is and we have this inherent connection to the family, and no matter what, we always do find ourselves caring about what our family thinks and wanting to make sure that our family loves us. And that's probably because of our genes or something, because we want to make sure our genes go on. I don't know, it doesn't matter what the reason is. It is what it is. There are certain people in society, maybe it's a priest or a psychologist or a psychiatrist, which we'll get into in a second, that sort of sits outside the family, who's not blemished by the problems of our family, who we go to. And interestingly, all of his patients in this film, they're talking about their own family problems. And we're going to explore this idea a little bit more in a second, but I just wanted to note that there, that in this conversation around honoring one's family, sometimes it's sort of going to a refuge island and just taking a break and getting away from it, looking back inside. Maybe that is a secret that we can maybe tap into, but we're going to explore that a little bit more in just a second. I think if we're talking about You Hurt My Feelings, the bottom line with this film, I think, is really that it really talks about how a human being's relationship with honesty is way too complicated to conceptualize in some kind of wise or simple and profound saying, right? So, and the reason for that is because it's so brutal. So if it is that brutal, what are the implications of wielding it? And we've talked about it slightly in You Hurt My Feelings, but, if you are honest, it can hurt someone's feelings and be quite brutal. But this is about, Julia Louis-Dreyfus's little book and, talking about whether she liked her earrings for her anniversary gift. What if we talk about, what if we're honest in a really serious grave situation? Can it cause some serious damage? Well, to finish off this week, let's talk now about Ordinary People, the Robert Redford's film from 1980. And if you've not seen this one, and it's a pretty famous film, won Best Picture back in 1981, but it's about a family. You've got Donald Sutherland and Mary Tyler Moore, the husband and the wife, and then they've got a son, and his name is Conrad. And we're going to focus mostly on Conrad for today's conversation. But this family consists of a mother and a father and their son Conrad, and they're tested because there has been a death of the oldest son. And we could kind of say maybe the death of the favorite son. It's got a very Stand By Me kind of vibes, which is like the parents completely opt out, or at least the mother kind of does, of life in a way, or it kind of alienates the younger son when the older The one that everybody liked, the cool one, the one that's good at sports, etc. He's the one that goes, and the younger one's like, well, you know, what about me? You know, I'm still here, kind of thing. And I think that does have an archetypal quality. You can probably find that littered through a lot of stories through history. And when I talk about this one, I want to just simply put the power of honesty. And power is one of the things we've talked about. It can be a good thing. It can be a bad thing. Okay, so the power of honesty. And if we're talking about the power of honesty, also, honesty, the power of honesty is relative to the lie, right? The respective lie that it's overcoming, let's say, or the lie that it precludes, or the lie that it leaps over, let's say, or the lie that it displaces might be another way of putting it. But let's start. At the beginning of the film, Conrad is this mess, right? Conrad is a mess. He's suicidal. And that's really huge to his character, that that caused trauma for his parents, that he was suicidal after the death of his brother. He's not eating. He has no friends. He's not really concentrated in school. He looks a mess at the start of this film. And there's this sort of crude and cruel and insensitive juxtaposition happening where his parents, and this film reminded me a lot of American Beauty. I'd never seen this film before, by the way. So I only just recently watched it for the first time. But his parents are annoyingly normal. They have this clean house. They're both very well dressed. There's a particular shot that I noted is the close-up shot of the napkins rolled up in those little golden napkin holders, which is like infuriatingly pleasant and civil. And I don't want to specifically talk about Mary Tyler Moore's character, because she weaponizes custom and convention in a way that infuriates me. It's that kind of denial of deeper, more yucky, uncomfortable feelings that someone may have. And sometimes those things can only spurt out through, you know, being rude or being brash or being a little bit blunt, not necessarily yelling as such, but being kind of like, listen, I got to tell you something that's going to make you feel sick, but it's how I feel. And she hides behind this kind of like, oh, you know, this is embarrassing for my friends to have to see, you know, out at the shops. Civilized people don't talk like this. And it's this cowardly kind of hiding behind the veil of civility, this wall, this armor of civility, in order to avoid deeper existential, seriously important problems that people that you're supposed to love are dealing with. And so we have this horrible clash throughout this film. We have a kid who's in a terrible state and parents who aren't necessarily coming to terms or really fully embracing how serious his situation is. Now, being a film, obviously, especially being an American film, we see the development of our protagonist, don't we? We see the development of young Conrad, and this is largely aided by his psychiatrist, Judd Hirsch, which I was saying before. And I was saying before, there's an archetypal nature to this benevolent outsider, pastoral caregiver, this benevolent outside, external, mental health practitioner. He almost is like a figment of the character's imagination. So he's like this guardian angel, this entity who guides everyone through their problems. It has a very Robin Williams in Good Will Hunting vibe to it. Or, speaking to Robin Williams, a bit of Dead Poets Society in it as well, a little bit. And as I mentioned before, the reason why it kind of works as this sort of floating archetype is because he's unblemished by the toxicity of the situation itself. He sits outside. He's contained within this psychiatry office that's away from the home, away from the pristine house. And it's sort of this point of refuge that Conrad can go to, and I suppose the other characters, when they see him throughout the film, can go to reset, come back, almost like a hero's journey, going off to this cave of refuge and then coming back with a refreshed idea. It's not to say that they've got wisdom, they've got secrets, and that the psychiatrist holds all the answers, but it's this blank canvas, this wall against which the tennis ball of fury and frustration could be thrown against, to then come back and be able to speak one's mind. And that's kind of the way that Conrad is able to not liberate himself, I'll say, but maybe integrate himself, really come to terms with everything that he's dealing with. So he comes back and expresses himself honestly with his parents as this film gets to the business end of things. And so we could say that he honors his family, right? He honors his mother and father in the way that God intended, by being honest with them. But something really interesting happens, which is that in turn, while he's bringing about his own integration, he does sort of split his parents. And there is this kind of push-me-pull-you paradoxical, contradictory motif that goes on through the film. And I should say as well, the more honest that the parents get with each other, eventually, the more things start to splinter and things start to unravel, let's say. But just going back to this motif of the paradoxical and this internally contradictory virtue, which we've seen throughout all of these films, you know, wanting to honor one's family and respect the sacred culture and customs and things like that, but it also being something that you can't actually believe in as an individual, or wanting to be honest with someone but knowing it's going to hurt their feelings, right? Every time we push in one direction, it pulls us back in another direction. This is very consistent with one of the key symbols of the film, which is that Conrad's brother, he dies from a boat accident. They're in the sea and they're both holding on like in a Titanic kind of situation. And Conrad lets go, or at least his brother lets go of the boat, and Conrad stays holding on to the boat. And what we get is this really complex metaphor of like Conrad's flaw being, and this is not me saying, like this is kind of like pretty like clear in the dialogue, that his flaw was not letting go, right? The flaw of him was self-preservation, not going after his brother, which is difficult to conceptualize. And anyone that's dealt with death in their life or the death of someone close to them has probably dealt with this on some level, that on some level you feel this weird sense of guilt that you should have done something more, that there was more that you could have done, but you were too focused on yourself. And it's one of the horrible tragedies of being in a familial or loving relationship, is that if the understanding or the assumption is that you should be caring or looking after someone, you can't help but feel somewhat guilty, or somewhat, even though it's not fair to feel that way, and that no one should ever wallow in it, you can't deny that there is that feeling. So that kind of lifts up the tragedy of a loving situation where self-preservation and looking after the collective in a family are at odds. And that's probably why honesty doesn't work out so well all the time, because sometimes honesty is used for self-preservation, and sometimes being dishonest can be used to preserve the other. So we're in this constant state of tension there, where honesty doesn't always work to preserve the collective. It's not always the means that justifies the ends. But let's put this in a more succinct way. Can we tie everything together now that makes things a little bit easier to understand? Well, at the start, we talked about the sacredity, right? Family is a sacred thing. We all can't help but feel an inherent bond with our family members. We can't help but feel that we owe them something. We also can't help but feel that families are riddled with secrets and lies and hidden agendas and contempt. And sometimes that's exacerbated by the fact that, you know, sometimes your parents are in a worse off situation than you are, and it was tough for them, and it's hard for them to be loving all the time. And equally, you're going through things yourself, and the problems of the world now are very different to what your parents went through. So we can't simply just disperse all of that with honesty. Honesty is a brutal thing, especially in the context of a very, very serious situation, like a death in the family. We can't just say whatever we feel. We're gonna hurt someone's feelings to the point that we feel that we caused some kind of like emotional murder. So perhaps rather than relying on little pithy and convenient, profound little phrases taken out of context from books from the Western canon, maybe we need to limit the use of honesty, right? And I'm not saying that we should always be dishonest, but limit it to the times when it was always supposed to be used, let's say. Limit it to those times when it best honors the ones we love. Well, unfortunately, that's all we've got time for this week on Sacred Cinema here on 2XX 98.3 FM, People Powered Radio. I've been your host, Jimmy Bernasconi, and you can contact me by emailing me at contact@jimmybernasconi.com. But stay tuned for more quality radio programming here on 2XX FM. Jump onto our website as well to consider subscribing to the show, subscribing to the station or sponsoring the show. But thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you again next week, I guess. Cheers.